Transformative. Can't read that one either. Epic. Breakthrough. Legendary. Innovative. Awesome. Beyond. On the edge. These are all words of excitement, right? These are words of great things. These are words of things that are exciting and powerful and good and extraordinary. And when Larry had asked me if I would do this morning, I wanted more than anything to, he said, you know, think of something that you're thankful for. And I wanted to find something extraordinary, something that I've done in this last year that nobody else in here had done, something that was so great, you would think, wow, that's extraordinary. I'm so glad that he has that to be grateful for. Turns out I didn't have any of that. Turns out, like most of us, I'm pretty ordinary. Just an average person, living a pretty average life. Didn't win the lottery this year, in the last couple weeks. All right, I was not invited to play right field for the St. Louis Cardinals during this last year. I wasn't appointed the president of my company. I didn't even have any more kids or anything like that. It's just an ordinary, ordinary life. So it kind of got me thinking then, well, how can we learn to be thankful in the mundane? Because I would bet that you are quite a bit like me, and you're just pretty average, right? In fact, if you think about it, over the last year, maybe since last Thanksgiving, or okay, for this week, what great things did you do this week? I mean, things that are truly great, things that were truly extraordinary and different and just wow. I don't think I did anything truly great. I counseled a student this week and helped her choose some classes to take, and I mean, that was about it. Now, what about the ordinary things? What kind of ordinary stuff did you do this week? Well, if you've been up and awake for more than an hour or so, you've done a lot of ordinary things already today, right? You got dressed, you probably took a shower, you maybe had a cup of coffee, you drove over here. That's all pretty ordinary, right? And it turns out that ordinary is where we live life, right? Check out this quote. This is from an author named Paul Tripp. And this, his Age of Opportunity, is a really good parenting book. And he says this: there simply are not many grand moments of life, and we surely don't live in those moments. No, we live in the utterly mundane. We exist in the bathrooms, the bedrooms, the living rooms, and the hallways of life. This is where the character of our lives is set. This is where we live the life of faith. Now, if you think about that for a minute, that's really a powerful thing, right? When was the last time you were thankful for your closet and going in your closet and finding whatever it was that you found to wear? And whatever it was you found to wear, you probably had more than one of them, right? You probably had a lot of them. Now, how do we respond differently to those mundane, everyday moments than we do those great moments? You know, great moments have their place, and they should be celebrated, right? That's why we throw big parties when we graduate high school, when we graduate college, when we get married, when we get a promotion at work, when we retire, right? Because those are truly great moments, and they deserve to be celebrated. But they're great for a reason, because they're memorable, and they don't happen all that often. If you graduated high school every day, where's the fun in that, right? If you retired every day, if you had a kid every day, where is the fun in that? Right? So how do we become more thankful in the ordinary? Unfortunately, there's not a lot of guidance in Scripture on this one. There's not a lot of differentiating between what is extraordinary and what is ordinary. So I have to dive outside of that a little bit. And a couple things came to mind. If you're familiar with the work of Daniel Goleman, who wrote Emotional Intelligence, it's a pretty popular text that's been around for a while. There's five kind of keys to being more emotionally intelligent and being able to understand and read your own emotions and understand the emotions of other people. And the first two are really kind of, I think, work with this really well. And the first one is just self-awareness, being aware of in this case, in the case of emotional intelligence, how you respond to different situations, right? What do you think and what do you feel as life is happening around you? Self-awareness and understanding how we respond to different situations is incredibly key, right? And once you are aware of the ordinary and of those plain everyday things that just happen, then the second piece of the emotional intelligence is being able to then self-regulate, and you can change or notice those and take those things in a little bit more particularly. That's one way. Another way, in another book by a psychologist named Jordan Peterson, who's at the University of Toronto, in his newest book called 12 Steps for Life, in one of the chapters in there, he talks about how more than anything, humans crave order. Right, we crave order and we try to push away from chaos. And he kind of pits order and chaos against each other. Think yin and yang, almost good and bad, dark and light. Luke Skywalker, Darth Vader, you know, however you kind of want to think of it. But we like order. And one reason that we like order is because we don't have to think about it. Right? You don't have to think about ordinary. You don't have to think about plain. You don't have to think about the familiar. And that frees us up then to be able to think about other things. But in an effort to keep chaos at bay, we like the ordinary, right? Even if we don't give it attention. We need to be more conscious of the ordinary, right? One thing, and I'm going to ask you to think about here this in a minute. So actually, go ahead and I have a couple more quotes up here. Take out your handy-dandy cellular device. I'm going to ask you to use it here in just a minute in a social experiment that we'll see if it works in here. I hope it does. But before that, I'll go ahead and throw these quotes up there. This is from another author named Rod Dreher. He says, "Everydayness is my problem. It's easy to think about what you would do in wartime, or if a hurricane blows through, or if you spend a month in Paris, or if your guy wins the election, or if you won the lottery or bought that thing that we really wanted. It's a lot more difficult to figure out how we're going to get through today." Right, and this one from a blog called White Horse Inn. "So our problem isn't that we're too active. Rather, it is that we've been prone to successive sprints instead of the long-distance run. There's nothing wrong with energy. The danger is that we're burning out ourselves and each other on restless anxieties, unrealistic expectations. It's an impatience with the familiar, sometimes slow and almost imperceptible aspects of life. And despite things like Snapchat, the richest things in life are made up of more than Kodak moments." All right, when was the last time you broke out your phone to take a picture of your morning coffee? Maybe that's not a good example because I know people do that, blog about their morning coffee. Or about making your bed in the morning or putting on your slippers. Right, the richest things in life aren't about that. What really drove this home for me is I was contemplating it this week, and it's funny how, because this actually happened before Larry kind of put out, told us what he wanted to talk about, thinking about the ordinary. So I was sitting in our downstairs, sitting on our couch, probably watching TV or something, as the kids, Kelly was putting the kids to bed upstairs, and she was going through their evening routine, something that she has done a lot of times, and she's singing to them. Right, as they're going to bed, she sings to them. Nothing extraordinary about any particular song, but our oldest is 12, so I imagine she's probably done this routine, 3,000 to 4,000 times over the last 12 years. And as I sat there just listening to her sing, there's nothing extraordinary about that. That is the very definition, when you've done it 4,000 times, the very definition of ordinary. But it's not, right? That's the stuff of life. That is the rich thing of life. That's the thing that our kids will remember when they're singing to their kids, right? And if I was to guess, I would bet that Kelly's mom probably sang to her when she was a kid, right? That's the rich stuff in life. All right, let's see if this works. Pull out your phones. Go ahead and click that link, please. What is a mundane thing that you are thankful for? So move the cursor a little bit, please. There, I need to get that. There we go. Oh. Move it again to the left. There we go. Don't touch it. Okay. The phone number that you need to send this to. So you open your text messenger, iMessage, or what have you. I know one person in here, I have a student in here, and we've done this in class, so hopefully it works. You're going to send it, the phone number is 37607, okay? That is the phone number you're texting it to. With that, at the beginning of the text message, in the text, type the numbers 354209, it looks like, 354209, and then whatever you want to say. What ordinary or mundane thing are you thankful for? Something so typical that it's hard to think of. Maybe it's the fact that you had lots of pairs of socks to choose from this morning, or that you have very soft toilet paper, or that you didn't have to go out to the chicken house to get the eggs this morning. Oh, maybe some of you did. Right, that your car started. Here they come. Water, my dog, deodorant, oxygen, food, chocolate, waking up every day, being home with my children, kids' laughter, hot water each day, Eskimo kisses, that family, waking up every day with my family, air, school, mouthwash, amen. Waking up my son every AM for school, crying baby, coffee. I have no idea how many of these are going to scroll up there. But this is really kind of what I wanted us to think about. There are so many little things in life that make life so grand. True Southerners also. Sweet tea and football. Goose down comforters. All right, there's nothing wrong with the extraordinary. The extraordinary is wonderful. The extraordinary gives us those memories, right? Going to Disney or the wedding or whatever it happens to be. But this is the stuff of life. These are the little things. Right, those little tiny blessings that God gives us each and every day. Wow, we should be thankful for those. As those continue to scroll, feel free to watch the screen and watch those come up. But let's offer God a prayer of thanksgiving for what's going on up here. Father, we thank you for the ordinary. We thank you for the mundane. We thank you for the order that is our lives and the things that make it special. We thank you for those little things that make life what it is, whether that's socks or a hot breakfast or hot water or a car that started or coffee or football or waking up with our kids and sending them to school, whatever that is, whatever those little things are, we just thank you so much for giving us those things and help us in this season in particular to be able to realize how blessed we are. As the verse that we looked at in 1 Thessalonians says that we are thankful for everything. And in everything. We thank you for this, Lord. We thank you for the blessing of the mundane. We thank you for the blessing of the ordinary. And it's in Christ's name, who is anything but ordinary. All of this people say, amen. All right, go ahead and flip back over to the other. All right, so one last little quote here, maybe. Go ahead and send it forward one. So this quote is from Shane Claiborne, and he said, "Everybody wants a revolution, but no one wants to do the dishes." Right? Let's be people who are willing to do dishes, that are willing to notice the ordinary. And I have a feeling that we're probably all going to mention this. But there's our 1 Thessalonians verse again. Let's read this out loud again. This is a different translation than what the previous one was. "Rejoice always, pray continually, give thanks in all circumstances. For this is God's will for you in Jesus Christ." Thank you.
Well, my name is Carl Grimes, for anybody who don't know who I am. I want to thank Matthew for his portion of the lesson this morning. He made it simple for me because exactly what I was going to do was what he displayed on the screen, to say that when we're thinking about Thanksgiving, it's easy for us to think about the things that were listed on this board. And what I wanted to see, if anybody's mind circle was working in the same that mine is, normally nobody's does. But I just wanted to see if anybody was thinking like I was thinking when I got the message from Larry that I'd have this opportunity to do this. And while I'm here, I'm thinking, I want to say thank you for this opportunity because there's so many qualified, so many people in this audience who could have taken this time and probably done better. But having the opportunity to do this is a very special thing and a very special time for me. I'm thankful for Matthew and following him in my segment because, you know, you can look up at him and you see the youth and the vigor and all of the modern technology. And I can say this, you know, when I was young, I used to look just like him. In my 20s. Well, maybe my 30s. Well, maybe I didn't. But this is bringing us to what my subject matter is going to be about today. What I want to talk to you about for just a little while this morning is a simple fact that this entire world is built on, a simple fact that we so easily overlook, a simple thing that should be a part of every single thing that we do, and it's the truth. See, the truth didn't appear up there on the list. You see, we live in a society where now truth is if you want to. If it fit where you need it to fit, if you want to, use it. But if it don't, just make up something. How many of us will be so glad when Tuesday come and go, and we'll never have to hear another one of those advertisements again? I am so tired of all of the negative that you can look at and see are nothing but lies. Nothing. There are things that are said about people, and I don't care what party it is or who it is, but it's things that are said about people that there's no way that that can be true. But yet there are people out there who believe it. There are people who take it to heart. There's people who will listen to people in power and say, let me go and kill 10 people or 11 people at a synagogue. That's the thing for me to do because the truth is this is what I understand that need to be done. So this is what we do. 1 Corinthians 13 and 16 says, love does not delight in evil, but it rejoices in the truth. And we need to take a minute to let that sink in. Love doesn't rejoice in evil. We live in a time where evil is just running rampant through our schools, through our streets, and through our homes. The thing that we have in our hands to combat all of those things is the truth. When we apply the truth and all of the truths that we need and all of our living is found right inside this book. And I want to share something with you where just the truth impacted my life just this past week. It was one of the hardest things I've ever had to do. This young man that grew up in my neighborhood, lived there until he was grown. He was one of those young men that spent many afternoons in my garage, and we rode around a lot together. We played basketball. We did a lot together. He didn't have a father. There was three families that lived right up the street from me, and there was a total of 13 kids. There was five or six boys, so as the boys got older, they gravitated to me because I wanted to try to be an influence in their lives. Well, after this particular young man grew up and he moved away to Georgia, I recognized when he was young that he had some temper problems, some things, anger management problems. And we talked about that a lot. But while in Georgia, that anger that he displayed when he was young from time to time, a child was killed. He pushed a child, and I don't know in anger is what I was told. I wasn't there. And the child fell down a flight of steps and later on died. This young man went to prison for his crime. He wrote a letter or two. We exchanged the letters a time or two, and 2 weeks ago, his family called me and told me that he was killed in prison. He was a few days from being paroled, just a few days. But while he was in prison, he was baptized, I have learned. While he was there, he found God. And I don't know if he was out on the streets, he would have been able to do that. But when I went to visit the family and they asked me to do the eulogy and I didn't know all of these facts, can you imagine all the things that was going through my mind? What are you going to say? How do you say it? How do we use diplomacy? How do we be politically correct or correct to a family that we have known and loved for so many years? How do we handle this situation? But finding out those things helped. But what I, after talking to Dale, I even went to the heavy hitters to try to find some help. And from the pulpit, he said some things that sent me on the way to where I needed to be. And I did that eulogy. And I told the truth. You see, in order to give the family some type of closure and give them the feeling of, you know, God is in control, we had to tell the truth about the whole situation. You can't omit things. You have to tell the truth. And so in our lives, principally, when we, young people, we use those things, the truth is always going to be the thing that stands. Somebody can tell you something wrong. I've been in many interrogations and someone lied. And after they lie, you have to repeat that lie. And you know what? Nobody can ever do that. It's always a little bit of something different after you tell that lie the second time. And then the third time, it'll get further away and further and further and further away from the truth. But you know, if you tell the truth, it's always going to be the same way. So in our Thanksgiving, when we think about things that maybe aren't mundane, things that aren't common, things that aren't, you know, let's be thankful for, first of all, Christ need to be the center of our Thanksgiving always. And the forgiveness that he so freely give us should be the center of our foundation always. I only have 10 minutes. And if you want to hear the rest of this story, you have to dial 1-800-76. No, that's not true either. But I appreciate these minutes that we have had today to speak to you about something that we should be so thankful for, and everything we should give thanks. There are people out here suffering from the loss of loved ones. We should be able to find thanks in that. There's people out here who are sick. There are people out here who needs God's love and grace more than at any time. We need to find a reason to give thanks. We need to let our life be that light, that city that sits on a hill that can't be hidden, so people can see Christ in us. And we do that through the truth. My 10 minutes is up.
Thank you, Matt and Carl. It's truly a blessing and honor to be able to stand on stage with men that love the Lord. Larry earlier led the song, When Upon Life's Billows. The chorus goes, count your blessings, name them one by one. Count your blessings, see what God has done. Count your blessings, name them one by one. Count your many blessings, see what God has done. Have you ever taken time to count your blessings? This is a song that I will sing on occasion when I'm traveling into work. And I don't want to listen to the radio, and I'll start thinking about some of the day's events. And at times, this is one of the songs that I will sing. And when I sing it, I can't help but stop and think about the many ways I've been blessed. And there have been times in my life when I tried to count those blessings. You know, I had 10, I had 100, I had 1,000. I'm not going to tell you I ever quite got up to a million, but every time I thought I was at the end, there was always another blessing. God has richly blessed us, and we have lots to be thankful for in our lives. Today, you already know what our theme is. It comes from 1 Thessalonians 5, verses 16 through 18. It's about thankfulness, being thankful. And I want to share with you one of the things that I'm thankful for today. Romans 12, verses 6 through 7 tells us we all have different gifts, each of which came because of the grace God gave us. The person who has a gift of prophecy should use that gift in agreement with the faith. Anyone who has a gift of serving should serve. Anyone who has a gift of teaching should teach. You notice I kind of highlighted that, made it red, made it a little bold so that you'd pay attention to that. I want to talk to you about teachers. I want to talk to you about the gift of teaching. In particular, I want to tell you about some individuals that made a difference and an impact in my life and some teachers that I'm truly thankful for and what they've done for me, and I hope I continue to use those lessons today. A little background about my education, where I grew up at. I grew up in Birmingham. First through third grade, I attended the public school system in Birmingham. Fourth through ninth grade, I attended a private Christian school. And then 10th through 12th grade, my family had moved to a little farm north end of the county. So I finished out my high school year at the county school system. So I spent a lot of time in public school, private school, and then county public school. A lot of different experiences. And I want to tell you about some of the teachers I've experienced along the way. First teacher, Miss Fowler. Miss Fowler was my fifth grade teacher. She was a wonderful lady. Her husband was a preacher at a congregation downtown Birmingham. I talked to Dale about her the other night, and he said that his memory of her was that she assigned more memory verses for us to memorize than any other teacher we had. And he's right. I remember us remembering not just a verse at a time, but complete chapters at a time. She's a lady that had us memorize Romans chapter 12. That's one of my favorite passages to this day. And I remember sitting in her classes, we memorized that and then recite that to her. But I don't remember her, and I'm not necessarily thankful to her for all that memory work, that memorization that she made us do. What I remember most about Miss Fowler is how much she loved us and how much she cared for us. She was the first teacher that I can remember that had a genuine concern in my welfare. And not just my welfare, but all the students. She would tell us that we could do whatever we set our minds to. And she would say it in such a heartfelt manner that you believed it. She made a huge impact on my life, and I'm thankful for Ms. Fowler. Elvis Henry Hufford Jr., some of you may or may not know him. He currently worships in Nashville, but at the time he was my ninth grade science teacher. Mr. Hufford, wow, he tried to teach us science in all sorts of interesting ways, demonstrations, and I will tell you that at times I was a little thick-headed, didn't necessarily get the message that he was trying to teach me until one day he demonstrated to me the difference between kinetic and potential energy in a manner that I still remember. Sometimes I still have a few nightmares about it. We had gone in a cargo van, and he and I had collected a cargo van full of folding chairs to carry to set up for an event. And he decided on the way, with these things rattling around in the back, to demonstrate to me what kinetic and potential energy was by applying the brakes in a rapid fashion. I survived, but I remember that lesson, and I thank Mr. Hufford for teaching me. Miss Bradley was a biology teacher in high school. I do not like biology. I did not like it then. I do not like it now. However, I took biology in high school, not because I liked it, not because I had friends in class. I did have some friends in class, but I took it primarily because Miss Bradley taught biology class. Miss Bradley was a wonderful woman. She loved her topic. She loved students, and she had a way of engaging and teaching that would just draw you in. Miss Bradley taught me what the word giddy means. Do you know what the word giddy means? Giddy is the way her voice would change and the excitement that would come over her as she would begin dissecting something and explaining to us the minute details of what she was doing. The woman became giddy with that. I love Miss Bradley. Miss West, 11th grade English teacher. Her first full year of teaching, we had the honor of having her as our English teacher. For those of you that I've been in class with, You probably have heard me talk about English was not really my favorite subject in school. It really wasn't. I had a difficult time with English. It wasn't that I didn't understand it. I just did not enjoy it. And it wasn't because of a lack of good teachers. I had a lot of good teachers. Miss West was one of those teachers. She did her best to teach me English, to teach me to understand. And while I may not have the appreciation for it that she does, I can tell you that to this day, I at least respect poetry. I might not like it a whole lot, but I at least respect it, and that's because of Miss West. Grover Keith. Mr. Keith was 12th grade government teacher. He was a giant of a man, physically tall, but also he was a giant intellectually. Mr. Keith was the type of man that would stand before you, and he wouldn't simply lecture to you. He would engage you in a conversation. He would draw you in. He would ask your opinion about current events. He would ask you about the political process. He wanted to know what you thought about it. He didn't spend his time telling you what you should think, but he would encourage you to think about things on your own. Now, he would ask questions to challenge sometimes your thoughts, but Mr. Keith was a wonderful individual to make you understand that. And to this day, he encouraged me as well as all of my classmates to vote. And that was the first year that we got to vote. And I voted then, and I've voted in every election since then. And I thank Mr. Keith for that. Another thing about Mr. Keith, he didn't just teach government. He was concerned about your soul. Mr. Keith would talk to you about your salvation, where you stood at in relation to God, where you went to church at. What did you do this weekend? Were you a reflection of God? Mr. Keith was not afraid to talk about God to those of us that were in his class. He was a giant of a man, and I thank Mr. Keith. These were all normal school teachers that I had in the day-to-day thing, but when I went to the private Christian school, we also had Bible class every day. And I had several teachers there, and I want to talk about them, but in reference to teaching Bible teachers, James 3, verse 1 tells us, "My brothers and sisters, not many of you should become teachers, because you know that we who teach will be judged more strictly." That one verse should scare most people off from ever wanting to teach, because there is a strong and huge responsibility associated with that, and that's to teach correctly. But I had some wonderful Bible teachers. Brother Dan Jenkins. Dan is Dale's uncle. He spent time as a missionary overseas. He came back. He became a preacher at a local church in Birmingham. I had him as a Bible teacher 1 year, and as well as he was a Bible teacher and counselor at church camp. Dan had a wealth of knowledge about the Bible, and the way he would share that information made you feel important and a part of what he was talking about, and I thank Dan for that. Jack Taggart was another man that I grew up with at church. Brother Jack was an interesting man. He did not tolerate insubordination in his class. You towed the line in his class, but he was a great teacher. He was very energetic and enthusiastic when he taught. And to this day, I still remember lessons he taught us about the crucifixion. Tim Shoemaker, not only was a teacher of mine, very dear friend as well. Tim's mind was so incredible in what he could draw out of the Word and how he could explain it. We spent a year studying the book of Acts with him, and it was probably one of the most fascinating studies I've ever had. Tim taught me to love studying verse by verse and even word by word, and it was always amazing to me what he could pull out of a verse and what he could pull out of a word. And I thank Tim for that. Brother Jerry Jenkins, this is Dale's dad. You've heard Dale talk a lot about him. Brother Jerry was a minister where I grew up at, but more importantly than that, he also taught Bible class that I was in. I remember Brother Jenkins teaching a class to a bunch of young, what we called ourselves, a bunch of young kids on the book of Revelation. an entire year studying the book of Revelation. And he was very patient with us and walked us through that study, explaining and answering our questions. And he never, never made us feel like the questions we had were unimportant. Frank Cook, I know there's at least one or two people here that know who Frank is. Frank was never my teacher. However, Frank and I taught Bible class together. Frank was a true student of the Word and is a true student of the Word. I was always amazed by the lessons he would prepare and how he would deliver that to the class, and how he would always have an answer for any question they would bring up. Frank also would prepare our Bible class material for church camp. He did a wonderful job with that, and Frank's a very dear friend of mine. Brother Ted Burleson, most of you probably know Brother Ted. You probably have heard him sat in on his classes. I tell you, Ted, and I've told Ted this before, Ted is a true teacher. When he teaches, he draws you in. And I feel like when I've sat in his class that I've been on an adventure, that we've made a discovery of some sort. It's just the method that he teaches, and I've always loved that about Ted and the way he does that. And these are all people that I'm thankful for, and they've made a big impact in my life. And I stopped with Ted, not because I haven't had more teachers and I don't have more people that I respect. I see several out here that I've sat in classes with, or my kids have had as teachers, that I've co-taught with, and all of you have made an impact on my life. The next part of this is we're to focus on giving thanks whatever happens. That means, yeah, you know, it's easy to be thankful when things are going good. When we're having our way, it's always easy to be thankful then. The difficulty is being thankful when troubles happen. How do we do that? What can happen to us to make us thankful? Well, can you keep a secret? No, really, can you keep a secret? Okay. Y'all need to listen to this real closely, because you need to learn from my mistakes. You don't have enough time to make them all yourself. Learn from some of us that have made them. I wasn't necessarily always a good student. It wasn't that I misbehaved or was disruptive in class. I didn't always apply myself to learning what my teachers taught me. They were all good teachers. They tried their best, but the fault's entirely my own. I just did not apply myself, and I'm really ashamed to admit that. But it made a big impact on my life, and it made a big impact for one major event that occurred. I received that grade in Bible class one year. Do you know how hard you have to work to get an F in Bible class? Guess what? I know. I really worked hard to get that F. But unlike most things that you work hard for, I wasn't really proud of that. And more importantly, the people that taught me were not proud of that. A lot of the people that you've seen in this presentation this morning, several of them talked to me and expressed how disappointed they were in my effort. I don't know if there's words that cut deeper than hearing someone you respect and admire look at you and say, "I'm disappointed in you." I had several of those people tell me they were disappointed in me. Now, my parents expressed their disappointment in a little different manner. And it was a manner in which I definitely remember, and it made an impact on me as well. But these teachers telling me how disappointed they were in me, that made me reevaluate the way I approached school. See, it wasn't that I couldn't learn, and it wasn't that I didn't have the ability. I just didn't do it. But because of this one event, it changed my outlook on school and what I should do. And somewhere about this time, this verse became very important to me, 2 Timothy 2:15. Study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. Because what this verse told me is that the responsibility wasn't just on those that were teaching me. It was a shared responsibility. I also had to study. I had to take the things that they were teaching me. And I had to first determine, was it correct? And also determine how it would fit into my life, how it would impact me. And so I thank those individuals for that time that they spent with me. And as ashamed as I am of receiving an F in Bible class, it did make a huge impact in my life. And it changed the way I approached school and the way that I would study. I want to leave you with a challenge this morning. The first challenge is real simple. I want you to thank a teacher. That's simple, isn't it? Just thank a teacher. Yeah, there's a little stipulation to it. Don't just give them the generic, oh, thank you, you're such an awesome teacher. I want you to be specific in your thanks to them. Thank you, Miss Fowler, for believing in me. Thank you, Mr. Hufford, for not killing me when you were demonstrating kinetic and potential energy. By the way, I spoke to him about 15 years ago, and I relayed that story to him, and I did thank him for not killing me. He was very gracious and very happy to hear from me. Thank a teacher, but be very specific in your thanks to them. Study the Word. 2 Timothy 2:15, study the Word. You'll never go wrong by spending time in the Scripture and studying it. So study the Word. Finally, I want you to be a teacher. Remember that earlier passage that we read from Romans talking about spiritual gifts? And it implies that not everyone has the gift of being a teacher. That's true. However, I would argue that to some extent, we are all teachers. Whether we stand in front of students and talk to them and share knowledge with them, or probably for the rest of us, how we lead our lives. You know, when you react to situations, how you respond to people, the people you interact with at work, all those people watch what you do. You know, we tell kids all the time, you know, watch what you're doing. Somebody's always watching you. Well, it's not just the kids. That applies to us as adults as well. So be aware that we're all teachers. And be a teacher and share God with those you're in contact with. In Acts chapter 8, Philip is taken to see a eunuch who is studying as he rides along in his chariot. And Philip goes up into the chariot with him. He explains to him what he's studying, and as they continue on in their studies, the eunuch looks out, sees a body of water, and makes a statement, here's water. What would prevent me from being baptized? And he's told, if you believe, you can be baptized. And they left the chariot, and they went down into the water, and they were baptized. We like to extend the invitation to those that are not Christians. If you've been studying, and you want that change in your life, you want to put the name of Christ on and be a part of his family. We want you to have that opportunity. But more than that, if you're already a Christian and you have some need in your life, you have some public sin that you need to confess, and you want the prayers of the church, or if you have some matter or issue that you're dealing with and you want us to pray with you, we would invite you to come as we stand and sing.